You don't want money that is not a good store of value, just in a very specific point in human history where that's the where that exists. But that's not the default, right? We have to remember that, okay, these more or less last 100 years, this is just a very small spot in human history where we just were all happened to be born in, where money is not a good store of value, right? Because governments have forced it upon us. But it wasn't like that before. It's not the normal state of things. The normal state of things is that money is a good store of value, right? Gold was a good store of value. In other occasions, societies, it was a good store of value. Various materials, right? We don't need to get into the history of money. But the important thing to remember is that we are the exception. We are the anomaly. We are where something went kind of wrong and has to be fixed.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We got Ben Kaufman on the show today, which I've read a couple of his pieces. I actually searched through the podcast history and I've only got one, but I swear there are two. I think it's because I stopped putting the author's name in the title just because the titles of the episodes were getting so long. So I think that might be why it's not coming up. But I'll find all the episodes. I think it's just two of previous works that we've read from Ben Kaufman. And I've been following Ben for a really long time, but he's been in the space for a really long time. Like, it's been years and years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, that we read his work on the show. And so I just was seeing some of the stuff that he was posting and I hadn't caught up with him in a really long time. I hadn't talked to him. And I was like, man, it'd be really fun to dig into Ben's perspective on this. Just because it's really good, especially when people disagree who've been here for 5, 6, 7 years. I like to dig into why. I like to dig into, you know, what some of us see is like Bitcoin failing and not having enough privacy, or Bitcoin having succeeded and like what it's doing really great, what it's supposedly doing bad at. And, you know, 5 years ago, what did you see? What did you see? Where did you see this heading? And what has fulfilled its promise and what hasn't yet? And so, you know, I just hit him up and we had a really, really cool conversation. Did not actually get to hit the spam wars because I ended up getting sidetracked and having to save a kid situation. So we had to cut it a little bit short. But maybe we'll have him on. There's always ample opportunity for conversations. I think you guys are really, really going to like the show. A quick shout out to our wonderful sponsors. We've got Ledin, LEDN.io. They do Bitcoin-backed loans. This is an absolute must-have for anybody on a Bitcoin standard. Like, if you, the simplicity of just having, of backing a loan with Bitcoin and then just getting the money, and you can reinvest it in Bitcoin if you want. But if you need access to fiat and you just don't want to sell your Bitcoin, and all you need is to buy yourself a little bit of time, it's a fantastic option, preventing yourself from hitting in capital gains and all that stuff. And Ledin's a great company. I've really, really enjoyed using them. Then we've got pubkey.app. That's PUBKY.app. It's basically a showcase for their tools, their protocol stack for re-decentralizing the web. And I think I have a link for an invite code that you can get down below. Then we have chroma.co, a link to a video actually that I did recently mentioning some of my favorite things that I've actually got from Chroma. But they do red light therapy. My biggest thing is they do the blue, red, black, right? Blue and green light blocking glasses to protect your hormones and circadian rhythm. I swear by those. Seriously, my wife got me on those and it has made a world of difference. Check those out if you haven't. And then lastly, the HRF, they do the Financial Freedom Report, which I'll dig into on a show every once in a while. But if you're trying to keep up with the fight for freedom around the world and the tools to defend it and the stories of the people who, of where they failed and also learning the lessons of how to actually win this battle, there's probably nobody better than DHRF. And a link down to their newsletter so you can check them out.
So with that, let's get into today's chat. This would be chat 155, where we are, where we've been, and where we're going with Ben Kaufman.
Ben Kaufman, welcome back to the show. I think we did do, crap, I didn't even look it up. We did a show just after like a read like 5 years ago or something, didn't we?
So you definitely read my articles when I just started writing. So that was, yeah, I don't know, probably like 5 years ago, maybe a bit more even. But yeah, I'm not sure we did like an actual show together.
Did we not?
I can't remember right now, but yeah. Well, not in the last few years for sure.
Yeah. My memory's terrible with stuff like that. So I'll have to consult the database. Dude, welcome, whether it's the first or the second time to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks.
So I wanted to get your thoughts. We've been thinking about recently, I've been, you know, fishing out for people whose thoughts I've really enjoyed and stuff I've really enjoyed, and respected over the years, I've been getting a lot of questions, and also, it's funny, like family members, like thinking about this from the context of like the 4 year cycle, right? Because we're in an odd spot when it comes to that, because that pattern maybe has broken, or at least in the general sense of the 4 year cycle, the third year is always supposed to be the big green candle. Historically, Bitcoin has always just liked to punish me. Like it's just like, it's the path of greatest pain is the way I've always referred to it, is that if you expect it to do something, it's just not going to do that thing. So I don't give it a ton of credence that it's supposed to follow this like perfect pattern. But nonetheless, I know it probably like has people wondering or concerned, or did like, you know, like, oh my God, we got ETFs. Did paper Bitcoin take over already? You know, and I'm just curious, like, what's your thought? What's your perspective on this? How do you think about where Bitcoin is today in the market sense?
Yeah, so I think with the 4 year cycle, well, maybe I think it's kind of like more flat than previous years, but it's definitely playing out. So we had the big rise. Now we're in the fall again. So it kind of seems like it's going to play out. And I think we've basically top for this one, and we'll see each other in 3-4 years for the next bull run.
I think
it kind of plays out, you know, the dates may be moved to one way or the other, but it's pretty much the same each time. It's the same cycle, it's the same bull run, then we're back down, everybody's surprised that we're back down, and then yeah, we go back up again, and everybody's surprised that we're going back up again. So yeah, it's just the same thing.
So in your estimation, you think 2026 is the hunker down and build year? It's the first of the bear market year?
Yeah, most likely I think it's going to be just chilling and building.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole, like, it's a move into politics and ETFs and like all this, like essentially the establishment, or the perspective from the establishment has changed drastically in the last year and a half. Curious your thoughts on that.
No, of course, everything is completely changed. You remember that everyone, politicians, banks, first of all, they ignore you and they laugh at you, fight. And now they're kind of they're trying to kind of join this and see how they can make the most out of it. It was taboo to talk about Bitcoin in like financial conferences or in financial circles a few years ago. Now it's just everywhere. It's obvious now, right? Nobody's denying that you should at least have a small allocation anymore, right? When in the past it was crazy to even suggest that in these circles, right? So we've come a long way, and it honestly, like, it's we all laughed about how it's gonna happen in a few years. So we knew that it was coming and it was kind of inevitable, but yeah, it's not the most fun outcome to us. It's kind of made it quite a bit boring, to be honest, in some ways. It kind of changed a lot of the community, I would say. But yeah, I mean, it's something we knew that that was going to happen. And yeah, it's just the natural progress of things there.
Yeah. You know, in the context of the whole financial circles and like mentioning Bitcoin, it's funny. A couple of years ago, I had something that I had wanted to do, or a direction I had considered with the show for some time, actually, was, which I don't think I was like really public about. I was just like starting to try to put out feelers to see how it would go, was to talk less to Bitcoiners and to actually reach out to people in like finance and investment and real estate. Like I was going out to like very like kind of like normie podcast things. And trying to just be like, would you want to come on the show or have me on the show or something? Would you like to do a show together and just talk about Bitcoin? I would love to hear your, I hate it for this reason perspective, or like just to just talk to non-Bitcoiners. I got nowhere. Like I got nowhere. Like everybody, I guess, and it's that's kind of a cold email thing, you know? And I, you know, I'm not a cold emailer, I guess. But I was just constantly being told, please shut up. And I don't deal with scams. And I was just like, Jesus, man, I'm just, you know, like, again, I don't have to come on your show. You could come on my show. Like, I just want to have a conversation about it. And I think people would find it interesting. But I basically got told to F off a couple of times and enough times and then ignored from everybody else. That I was just like, this is not a direction that is going to be fruitful at all. I was curious if you had any, because I do agree that I think that shift has occurred. And maybe actually it would be a good time to start doing that again, to see if that whole path is actually possible for, you know, finding good conversations. But I was curious if you had any like personal experience or anything, like if there was something specific other than just kind of like the general sentiment that that makes you think that, or like a conversation that stands out.
So it's kind of the thing, like, well, in the past we used to have our own, you know, community, and we would talk to each other, but people from the outside, they didn't really want to talk about it either. They didn't know what it is, or they thought it's a scam or all of that. Right now, from what I feel, it's just completely different right now. So right now everybody knows about it, and it's completely legitimate now. Everybody's okay. Everybody in his cousin has been investing into some crypto thing, right? So everyone is kind of okay. We're comfortable with it now. That the president was shitting a shitcoin, right? So I mean, it's not
going.
It's no longer, yeah, it's no longer something that is like weird to people or that is scammy to people. Like, okay, the president is doing stuff with it, so yeah, everybody is kind of into it to some extent, right? So. Mm-hmm. I mean, but the other side of it is that now, I get kind of like now that everyone is a Bitcoiner, nobody is a Bitcoiner, right? So it's the problem, like everybody's gotten into it. So we kind of diluted this community there, I'd say. So it's harder to do like Bitcoin only podcast, Bitcoin only content, kind of having to expand, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. Do you think it dilutes the mission or the capacity for Bitcoin to do what we've always thought it would do?
I don't think it dilutes the capacity. I think so. I'd say that we had like a few theories of how things would turn out, right? So with, like one option would have been that, okay, there would be a certain big collapse and it will just emerge from it, right, as a natural replacement. Another, that the government will try to attack it as much as it can and kind of like reduce it to a certain black market side of things. But this financialization that we're seeing was also one of the like one of the very probable options we all knew that is kind of quite likely to happen. So it's not something we didn't know that it was coming. It was definitely, well, we weren't sure that this was the way, but it was definitely on the table that this is one of the things that would happen. So it's something that we knew that was coming eventually.
Inevitable in one way or another.
And yeah, exactly.
The quote unquote community, so to speak, kind of loses its center. And I guess, you know, one of the things that's kind of surprised me to some degree, I guess not to a huge degree, but is how little new people have gotten interested in Bitcoin, but then they don't care what Bitcoiners think. Like they don't like, you know, like they're not like asking Bitcoiners for like, how does this work? What should we do with this? You know, like they're still asking. It's like it's like they suddenly they found out and then they're asking CNN and it's like CNN is like, what do you think about Bitcoin? What should we do? Who should we invest in? It's like, well, definitely go right to BlackRock. And it's like, bitch, we've been here for 15 years. We've learned all the hard lessons. Ask us.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So now everybody's kind of going this way. And like instead of, okay, in previous cycles, I don't know, 2017, 2021, they would still come to you and like, okay, how do we do that? You'd see like people crowding conferences, right, to try and understand, okay, how do I install a wallet and all of that. But now once they have it on their broker account or whatever, they just buy there and forget about it, right? They don't, like most people don't care enough to understand what's even going on. And yeah, that kind of dilutes the mission to some extent. And we need to be careful that this doesn't happen, you know, to the extreme. But we also cannot do much against it. Just try to educate as much people as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's education. And then also, like, we have an uphill battle, but I think we also have more tools than we have ever had at our disposal for building good UX that doesn't, that compromises what needs to be compromised without compromising on the critical things. You know, like allowing for sovereignty and also that kind of like simple, oh, I'm just going to log in, I'm just going to do a thing sort of experience that a lot of users expect. And there's been a lot of moves in that direction. And it was interesting because like you work with Bitcoin Keeper and you mentioned Miniscript just before the show. And that has been like one of those things that like when we can like standardize second paths, you know, like standardize like ways to you know, even like claw back mistakes, you know what I mean? Like this idea, and I don't even mean it necessarily in covenants, but like a, this is going to take, in fact, I read an article today, this morning when I was just going through stuff about how insane it is that AI is making it that like you can't tell the difference between the real world and the fake world. And one of the things was that like there was a CFO that was convinced over a phone call that they were talking to their CEO and told to send a wire, and the CFO got all of the details right and sent the wire, and luckily they were able to pull it back, but it's because it was a wire. And they actually mention in the thing, you know, everybody talks about like how great Bitcoin is because it's irreversible. It says, but the fact that they were able to claw that back is actually a feature, not a bug. And I thought that was really interesting and like a really like a super important thing because of this. And we actually can do things like that. We can make it so like a standard transaction literally has a 3-day wait period or something. And so I wanted to get your thoughts about like how, you know, Bitcoin Keeper and how you've been thinking about that and like how Miniscript plays into this, because I feel like it's a totally untapped, because we've had this like, oh, it's irreversible and not your keys, not your coins. We don't really think about that as being kind of an important piece of the puzzle, you know, of allowing, quote unquote, I guess allowing trust, but also just kind of like allowing a check, you know, like a period of a pending period of, have I made a bad decision? Let's do the homework a second time. Let me reconfirm. So anyway, I was curious your thoughts on that and how the stuff you've been working on falls into it.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm very excited about, but it actually doesn't exactly exist right now, right? Because what you're describing is more similar to a covenant than to what Miniscript allows today.
Yeah, yeah.
So the big difference, okay, so what people kind of get wrong most of the time is the difference between what we can do and what we need covenants for. So what we can do right now is we can limit the spending of funds in a lot of ways. Okay, this is what Miniscript allows us to do very well. It allows us to put limits on the conditions on which the funds are unlocked. Okay, So let's say I can say that I want certain times for the funds to be unlocked. I want certain keys. I want pre-image of a certain hash or whatever, right? So we can put a lot of limitations on how the funds can be unlocked. But what we cannot do, and that's very important, is we cannot control how the funds are spent once they are, let's say, unlocked. Okay, once you satisfy the script, we cannot control the outputs of a transaction. We cannot limit and say, okay, this transaction must be sent to this specific address. Kind of say that we can control the inputs and what's going there, but the outputs we cannot really control with that. There's no way of the input to say anything about what the output of the transaction should be. So if I want to say, okay, I need to send to an address that has some cooldown period or something like that, we cannot do that naturally today on chain.
Technically, couldn't you do it with a relative time lock though? Where with these two keys, there's a, after it's, you know, block, whatever.
No.
You have to wait like to this block height after it's broadcast, but one key could take it back.
So the time lock starts when you receive the funds, right? That's the thing. The time lock starts. So let's say you sent me funds and I received them, right? So this is when the time lock starts, when you send me the funds. But now that I want to send them, that depends on the time lock that started when you sent the funds, not on a time lock that starts when I want to send them again to someone else. You see the difference?
Okay.
Time lock starts when you send me the funds, not when I want to send them to someone else. You see? So gotcha. That's the main difference.
Okay, yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
If we want the time lock on when I can send them to someone else, like a time lock that initiates like a request to send them to someone and then that time lock starts, that's not something we can do right now naturally. We can simulate that with pre-sent transactions.
Oh, that's right, because Lightning does it by having two steps. They have another multi-sig with the second set of instructions, and that's how they do it. You're not sending it directly to them. You're sending it to another joint that then has the time lock. That's why I was confused.
It's a confusing part basically. But yeah. So that's the thing. So to do that, we can do it. And there are some projects that do something like that with pre-signed transactions, but we cannot do that like fully on chain. We have certain level of trust and management of off-chain data. Basically, that's the thing. If we want to do that fully on chain, we'd need covenants, and that's another story, basically. But
are you a covenants fan?
I am a covenants fan. I think it's pretty useful, as you said. This is an idea. Yeah. The idea that you described is basically what's called the vault. I'm a big fan of this idea. I think it could be very interesting. But yeah, just not practical enough without covenants on chain. We have a few proposals. But none of them is moving enough right now. But I'd love to see that happening.
Yeah. Talk about Bitcoin Keeper a little bit. How did that integrate that?
Yeah, Keeper basically integrated that. We used a library that was written by the same person that created what's it called? And I think the project name is Rewind, but Rewind? Maybe I'm getting it all wrong. It actually does basically what you described with actual vaults, but with pre-signed transactions.
Oh, really?
So we utilize that to integrate into Keeper Miniscript. What we did in Keeper basically is we tried to find a way to balance the complexity that it comes with Miniscript and the UX that we wanted to give to the user. So you cannot just, or it's a bit hard to just throw all the options on the user and let them choose, right? Because Miniscript allows a lot of constructions, a lot of options. So you need to kind of balance that and how you show that to the user. So what we did, we allowed two options, well, three options actually. One of them, the first one was what we called an inheritance key, where you have a multi-sig setup or even a single key setup, where after some time, another key is being activated. So let's say I have two out of three wallet, and after 3 years, a key that my, I don't know, my friend holds or a lawyer holds or whatever, that the key becomes activated. So it's now, instead of a 2 out of 3, it's a 2 out of 4. Or instead of being a 2 out of 2, it becomes 2 out of 3. Instead of a single key, it becomes a 1 out of 2, whatever. But basically, it just allows for easier inheritance planning. So you can give someone a key, but it's not yet active, so they cannot do anything with it yet. But later on, it becomes active and they can use it to send transactions.
Yeah.
The second option we gave is an emergency key, which is very similar. The difference is that the emergency key was able to spend by itself. So instead of being, let's say, instead of converting a 2 out of 3 to a 2 out of 4, it would have the 2 out of 3 normal, but you'd have an extra key which could spend by itself, you know, without any other key being involved. That's more for emergency recoveries where you lost, you know, a catastrophic loss where you lost 2 out of your 3 keys, so you can no longer assign anything, or you lost all of your keys, you can no longer assign anything. So that's kind of like for that emergency situations. And then the last thing we allowed was basically full time lock on spending. So just allow the user to set a wallet where they can receive funds but can only spend them at a specific date, which could be nice, I guess, if you want to do like gift someone coins, but you don't want them to be able to spend them just yet. So you okay, you have to hold it for a year at least, and then you can actually spend them. with something like that. But yeah, it's a nice use case. It can have its issues because you cannot spend it if you're in a real emergency. But it's a nice use case, I think. So these are the 3 things that we enabled in Keeper with Miniscript.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about that is that I felt like Miniscript is such an interesting tool, but it does come with this, like, I think this is the perfect way to think about it, is like, okay, we're going to offer like 3 set things. And I also kind of expected that at some point, the whole idea of like a key, what's it called? Like hierarchy, like a key decay setup. And then also like, you know, an alternative path. They would develop some sort of a standard, and then it would just be like one type of transaction. Because like my thinking is like, okay, yeah, I want to be able to have these tools and build whatever construction I want. But then you think about it from like a typical user, like nobody wants to, you know, nobody wants to Photoshop their Bitcoin. Like, yeah, you know, like nobody wants to come in with this thing that's got all these tools and you're like, what the hell is this thing? How does this work? You know, like how do I edit this interface?
Yeah, I see.
No,
I agree. I think that's why we try to simplify it. There's still some use case where you want more stuff. Of course, you can have a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
But we try to simplify it just to start with. There was also, I mean, Miniscript is still very much in the beginning. There are now a bit more wallets that support it. But when we started, I think we were basically the third. Like, there was Liana, there was Bitcoin Core, and then us, right? So,
Still pretty few. It's slowly but surely like expanding. I'm seeing it more and more. And exciting that it is.
Exactly.
But yeah. I'm curious, in working with that, like, did you test it out with a bunch of different hardware wallets and you know, quote unquote signing devices? And what was your general experience with those? Because I know some of them, like PSBTs, are a pretty common standard, but some of them the flow is still just like, I wouldn't want to have to explain it to somebody that wasn't like a serious Bitcoiner, you know? I'm curious what your thoughts about, like, which wallet did you use? Because there's still some that I haven't even used. I still haven't used Spectre. I just found out about Crux the other day, the open source firmware that you can turn like any little device into one, which is super interesting. In fact, I've been meaning to hit them up to get them on the show. But what's been kind of your experience? Like, what do you like? Let's say with Bitcoin Keeper in general. What's like your favorite wallet to use with it?
I'm not sure, because there was, let's say, these advantages and disadvantages to using each wallet. The easiest thing that was to use for me was a tap signer, which was you just tap it and that's it, which is a very easy UX.
Tap signer.
It's super fun. It's super nice to use. But yeah. Of course, it doesn't have a screen, so it's less secure. So, but of course, yeah. it makes it easier, right? You don't need to check anything because you can't check anything anyways. So it's kind of like in the middle, I'd say, but it's fun to use. So I like that. Yeah. Besides, I'd say, Hold Card is also was super nice to use because it has the NFC. It has now the QR with the queue, right? The ones that are that are USB, like Ledger or Bitbox, it's a bit harder, because we didn't have like full USB integration there. So we had to basically do it with the, like a companion app on your computer, which kind of made the UX a little worse, I'd say.
Clunky. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So we just didn't have the resources to develop that for every one of the wallets. But yes, we just did it with existing tools and the companion desktop app. It was still nice, right? But it makes the UX a bit worse compared to QR based wallets or NFC based wallets.
Yeah. I swear by the tap signer. Because of that, like UX. In fact, I have 9 or 10 tap signers or something. And when I'm like onboarding people now, I give them a tap signer, because it's just too easy. And honestly, it's usually like, it does the most important thing, I think, is it just gets the keys off the phone, you know? But dude, I would love, and I know there's like one wallet that is like super close or like almost, but if you could get one that was literally just a card and you could get it to display, like to just like the thinnest, simplest, like just like a little digital, like a clock screen, you know what I mean? Yeah. To display the address, the amount and the fee that is being sent. Before you, and you had like one yes and no button or whatever. And it was the size and thickness of a credit card, maybe a tiny bit thicker. That would be great,
I think.
In my opinion. Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely agree on that. I haven't seen anyone doing that, but that would be really nice. I think that would be a great UX. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm curious. I'm not sure if I even know how or when you got into Bitcoin. It's a little late in the show for the how'd you get into Bitcoin question. But what did you do before Bitcoin Keeper and the writing? Because I found your writing, I feel like pretty early on when you were, I don't know, maybe when did you get into Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think wrote these articles that you read in the show was probably 2019, most likely. And I started getting into things like around 2017, I think it was.
Okay.
I started with shitcoins because that was called, I came like with the developer background, and that's what, okay, everyone was trying to convince you to kind of work on shitcoins because, oh, you can develop shitcoins, right? You cannot write smart contracts on Bitcoin, but you can do it on shitcoins. So you're a developer, you should go to shitcoins only, right? So yeah, of course I did that for a while. And then when I moved more into like Bitcoin focus, then yeah, that's when I started writing those articles and all of that. But yeah, I mean, how I got into it is I just heard from a friend about it, something about Bitcoin. I he wanted to ask me some questions, because I was like a developer, and then I didn't know anything about it. So I got curious, started reading, and yeah, that's mostly how I got in.
Gotcha. What was your craziest, or like, maybe what's your biggest regret actually between then and now?
Well, besides not buying enough.
Yeah, that one doesn't count. You can't, everybody's
that's
got
universal,
that
universal, right? That's universal. I mean, there was just a time that I didn't do almost any Bitcoin related development for a while. So that's I regret a bit. I kind of was, took some time off. I regret that a bit, but I don't know, not much besides that, I guess.
Yeah. You said you have recently started working at Synonym, which I literally didn't even know. What are you working on with them? Because that's really awesome. I've been like really closely following what they do. And I still am waiting for like something to like catch and roll with that. I love their BitKit wallet. The design of it is so like the aesthetic and like the flow of the BitKit wallet. I don't know. I really like it. Is that where you're working? Like you're working on BitKit?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been working with them like very recently. And my focus was almost entirely on BitKit so far. Yeah, it's been very fun, and I really like working on this wallet.
How's it like working with John?
Well, it's not such a small company, right? So we don't work that much. Like we don't talk all day together, right? But it's completely nice. It's all fun, and I like John a lot. So
John is one of my favorite, very, very opinionated Bitcoiners.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But it's been fun. God. And I think BitKit is really cool. I hope to bring it, it's mostly Lightning focused, which I haven't worked on for I usually stayed on the on-chain side in previous works that I did. So I kind of hope to also bring a bit of that into the wallet. So, some more advanced stuff. Also working with Lightning now has been pretty nice.
Yeah, what's your take on Lightning? How do you see Lightning right now and kind of like its maturity, like and how you're working with it, and then also kind of like what UX is deliverable right now in with the state of the protocol, so to speak?
So again, I'm not like, they just started because I was not focused on Lightning at all before. I didn't do much with it until very recently.
Do you use it a lot?
But I use it quite often. Yeah. Well, not a lot, but I do use it from time to time when there's the opportunity. Yeah. Basically, anytime that you want to pay something that except maybe very big things, anytime you want to pay is usually with Lightning. Like not really. It's really the go-to for payments. It really did become the go-to protocol for payments.
Yeah, that's totally true. In fact, I don't even know. It's been a really long time since I almost hadn't even thought about that. But like, if you're paying with something with any of the merchant tools or whatever, it's Lightning kind of by default. Yeah. Like when I went to Plan B conferences or whatever, like all of it was just Lightning.
Exactly. Exactly. And anything that you want to pay is just Lightning these days. A lot of people use either, some use custodial, some use self-custodial, but it's all Lightning all the time. It just became the go-to for payments. Even the new, Arc, Sparkle, are integrating with Lightning.
It works and because of Lightning.
Interoperable with Lightning, right? Because
it's
just the go-to right now.
Yeah. What's your main Lightning wallet? Do you have a favorite custodial and favorite non-custodial?
Well, favorite and non-custodial, I have to say BitKit, right? Favorite custodial, I would say Speed is very nice to use for me. Custodial one.
Speed
wallet. It does like...
Speed wallet.
It's not that common because it does have like USDC, USDT and that stuff. But also it just worked for me. So I stayed with that. And I really like the UX there, honestly. So, it's custodial, but it just works. So for small payments, it's very nice to use. So you don't keep a lot of money there. But then, if you have $50, $100.
You withdraw your BitKit.
I usually just withdraw there. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's something that always like gets me is this argument that good God, there's nobody who understands the lesson better than, somebody who's been in the space for, 12 years, 15 years or whatever. The whole failing to recognize that not your keys, not your coins it should also be weighted by how many coins we're talking about.
Yeah,
is that
exactly.
Because I'll be like, oh yeah, you could totally just use, you know, like Primal has an internal wallet, right? Or mm-hmm. Wallet of Satoshi, and I'll recommend it every once in a while to people.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah,
you're not a real Bitcoiner. You recommended something that's custodial. They're like, bitch, we're talking about like $4.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like, of course, there's a threshold. Like, as soon as this is like $300 or something that's like meaningful that you don't want to lose, you withdraw it. You know, you put it in your Bitcoin on chain, or you have a non-custodial Lightning wallet. But there's nothing wrong with using a custodial that you can just empty or refill based on how much you're willing to risk.
Exactly.
And so anyway, just always thought that was silly.
You know, I'm talking about all the time, talking about multisig, hardware wallets, miniscript. But if you just want like $4 or $5, just use a custodial one and you're still good, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's normal these days, right? It's, you don't have to. The thing is, okay, what's important is that you have the option to have it non-custodial if you want.
The option to exit.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the option to exit, and you have the option to even have that completely non-custodial. So it's important to have the non-custodial tools as for people that actually need them, right? So someone who's actually being censored, that is actually experiencing like censorship or certain limits, right? It's important to have these tools for them. But if you just want to like receive some tips on Noster, or just have some small copy purchases, like normal stuff, that's for most of people, a custodial would be just fine normally. You know, you don't have to go through it. It's important to have the option, but you don't have to do it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your take on the whole difference between the conflict or the cooperation, whether you think it's one or the other, between the medium of exchange and the store of account or store of value?
Store of value. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about kind of where we are in the whole Bitcoin space and Bitcoin's mission, like what Bitcoin can do? And is it being diluted because it's like, oh, but everybody just use it to save? Or are these irrevocably connected to each other? I'm just curious your thoughts. A lot of people debate it.
I think they're definitely connected. You don't want money that is not a good store of value. We're just in a very specific point in human history where that exists, but that's not the default, right? We have to remember that, okay, these more or less last 100 years, this is just a very small spot in human history where all happened to be born in, where money is not a good store of value, right? Because governments have forced it upon us. But it wasn't like that before. It's not the normal state of things. The normal state of things is that money is a good store of value. Right, gold was a good store of value. In other occasions, societies, it was a good store of value. Various materials, right? We don't need to get into the history of money. But the important thing to remember is that we are the exception, we are the anomaly, where something went kind of wrong and has to be fixed, right? Mm-hmm. We're not the common thing, and like Bitcoin is this new idea. Oh, we have money, which is both good medium of exchange and a good store of value. It's something that naturally comes together because this is the money that the market would prefer. That's just it. So I think it's very important that Bitcoin is a good store of value. That was like the foundations for it, for also being a good money and like being a good medium of exchange eventually. Medium of exchange, you need actually be able to exchange it, right? So this is where Lightning comes handy. Certain scaling solutions are important. But yeah, the important thing is that they're not contradictory. They come along together.
Yeah. Generally felt the same thing because like there's a whole lot of people who kind of harp on the like Bitcoin has to be used as a medium of exchange. And there's part of me, or it's going to be captured. And there's part of me that, like, I prefer for that to be the way we think about it, specifically because I think, you know, it needs a lot of pressure and needs a lot of people caring about it to build the tools for it to be that. But I also don't think it's totally accurate. It's like one of those things that, like, I think is decent practical advice for pushing things in the right direction, but that if you have something that people desire, like, you're not going to get everybody to accept something as mm-hmm. payment unless everybody already wants it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Like you kind of have to do store of value first. But the thing is like, I still want everybody building all the tools to have it as a medium of exchange, because when we get to that point, I don't want to have to wait 2 years for everybody to then build the tools to get to that point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, Bitcoin just becomes medium of exchange because people actually want it. Yeah. As you say, I assume you prefer to get paid in Bitcoin. I definitely prefer to get paid in Bitcoin, right? So.
Oh yeah. I charge people a fee if they don't pay me in Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is already a medium of exchange, right? I mean, a lot of people, me, you, and a lot of other people prefer to be paid in Bitcoin, prefer to make payments in Bitcoin.
Having to sell Bitcoin hurts, especially when you are certain it is going to be worth more in the future. But you can actually get access to the fiat without selling it by using a Bitcoin-backed loan. Maybe this is for an emergency. Maybe this is for an investment that you think will do really well, but it won't beat Bitcoin because it's monetizing. Or this is actually something that you know you'll get back, but the timing just isn't right, and you don't want to let Bitcoin go for that span. This is why Ledin was built. They let you borrow against your Bitcoin quickly and easily. And Bitcoin is the ultimate collateral. There is no more perfect thing to use securely in this setup, and something that you can verify with their proof of reserves that they do. There are no monthly payments if you don't want. You pay it off at your pace. There's no penalties for early payment. There's no finder's fee. It is quick and simple to get your funds. I think their turnaround right now is like 12 hours. And I don't know why every Bitcoin company doesn't do this. Everybody who's at least holding Bitcoin for other people. But they do a proof of reserves so that you can confirm that your balance is there. And something that made me really happy recently is they just cut their Ethereum loans, they cut their yield product, they cut their non-custodied loans at lower rates, and so they now offer one simple hyper-focused thing. Custodied, secure, easy, Bitcoin-backed loans. Use someone with a good track record who's done over $10 billion in loans, available in over 100 countries. They do proof of reserves, and they've made it through the toughest times in the market without having a single problem. There's no credit check. There's no hassle. It's simple. This is why Ledin.io exists. Get the value of your Bitcoin without having to sell it. Remember to read up on how the collateral works. They're really good at reaching out and making sure that everything stays balanced. Remember that Bitcoin is volatile, so do not overextend. But if you know how to use it, this could be a huge benefit to your Bitcoin stack and give you optionality in accessing fiat without it being that selling Bitcoin is your only option. I've been a very happy customer. Check them out. The link and details are in the description.
A, what's your thoughts? But then B, have you actually gone to a merchant with the Square rollout?
And I know.
Yet? No, you haven't.
No, I'm not in the US, so it's...
That's right. That's US only, isn't it? Where are you based out of?
I'm everywhere. Traveling a lot, so...
All over the place. Gotcha.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I forgot the rollout is, I think, US only right now. Of course, most of their merchants are US. Square is now and they're in like a couple of different
Square
countries.
I think mostly the US. I'm not sure. I know they're mostly in the US, but then also I think UK. Mm-hmm. Not sure where else actually. But yeah, outside of the US, it's not common to see it. So yeah.
Yeah. I went to the Raleigh Bitcoin meetup with Steve. He does the bar, and bought two beers and was pretty stoked. I mean, worked like a charm, you know, it worked really well. I was pretty impressed with it, though. That he did actually have like a problem with, somebody who came in that night, we were doing a hodl up game night. I'm not sure if you know the hodl up game. This shit is so much fun.
No, I'm not sure. But, I don't think so.
You should definitely check that out if you haven't. It's a really fun game. Somebody came in and they paid with Strike. And so it was Strike to Square. And they, on the Strike side, it said it went through, and then Square just acted like they didn't receive it. So it was like, well, shit. It's like, they're like, just roll out and we got like a big problem. And they're like, what do we do? Do we, you know, I guess we just give them a beer and just like take the loss, you know? I did it from a non-custodial and it all worked fine. But you know, who knows with some of it, but there's going to be a lot of growing pains. Cause
yeah,
as Steve said, like, man, I like it. You know, I want to accept Lightning and Bitcoin and all that stuff. But there are a lot of errors. There are a lot of payment errors.
Yeah, it's hard in the beginning.
Pains for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking back, let's say, okay, let's go back to 2019. It's been 6 years, right? What has happened in the last 6 years from a big picture perspective that's the biggest thing that, like, you didn't see that coming? Not even necessarily like Bitcoin, because like I'll tell you mine actually is I thought Bitcoin would be bigger by this point as kind of like a player in the political realm. I mean, it is, but I just thought it would be a lot bigger from a market standpoint.
Yeah.
AI is the thing that like I didn't even see.
That's definitely what I was about to say.
Expand on that, because that's definitely mine too.
Yeah, of course we can. As you said, I also thought it would be like Bitcoin would be bigger, but it got quite big. I thought that the like one thing that is a bit different now is how the community got kind of like spread over. Like you have so many people, so the dynamics changed so much. But I think the biggest thing by far is how AI is coming now. So I'm no expert on that, on this subject. I was completely skeptical at the beginning. I mean, and 6 years ago, nobody even talked about it, really. So it wasn't even a subject, right? Yeah, until ChatGPT came out and kind of started making grounds. It was just not a subject people would really discuss or think about even, you know, thought that it was coming this way, right? I mean, last 2 or 3 years, it started really, really growing. Like last 3 years, I think, right? Started really growing. Now, I mean, when it started to like, I saw the first results. So especially focused on the field that I work on, right? Programming. I saw like AI code. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was shit. It was terrible. Like
so bad.
You couldn't use that. I didn't know much about it, so I said, okay, there's no way this is gonna do much. This is not gonna do anything for my job, right? But right now, I'm using AI all the time. Right now, I'm using it to work all the time. Right? It's crazy. Yep. Like it's hard for me to imagine now working without AI. The productivity boost that it gives you there.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's something else. So, I mean, this caught me completely by surprise and it's really changing things, right? It's really changing everything.
Yeah. Dude, I have been on a vibe coding rampage the last few weeks. In fact, just last night I finished. So I've been building just kind of like single task scripts, basically. So like anytime I'm just like, I need to organize this folder. Like I'm just like, okay, how do I make a script to do this? I went through and consolidated. I've done like a couple of like random backups of the podcast feed. But they're all like every single time I've used like a different tool. And so they're like named differently or like numbered in like a weird way. So I went through and I built like a handful of little scripts to do a couple of things. One of them was to download and then normalize the naming on all of the podcast episodes from start to finish, to go through and convert them all to wave format. Then to go through and run a Whisper model to transcribe the entire thing in and then chunk it out into like 10 to 30 second pieces that are all kind of like contextually relevant. You know, like each thing is like a specific thought. And I used two little models for that, obviously Whisper. But then I used, Gnomic? I think it's Gnomic, the 1.5, the smaller model, but it's still like a 150 megabytes or something like that, to do vector embeddings for the entire database of my transcriptions of my entire podcast, and then build a simple little, like one shot, I built a little web interface for it. And now I can just like contextually search for anything in the entire history of my show. And I specifically was like, I started testing it on a couple things where I was like, okay, how can I know that this is like good semantic search? So I searched privacy in one of the episodes, and it literally brought out sections in which I did not say the word privacy at all. So it's no keyword search. But one of them, I was describing what a coin join transaction was. One of them, I was literally just giving an example of like, okay, so Ben signs one, and then my wife signs one, and then I sign one, and then we put it together, and it's like one signature on chain. So we have a larger anonymity set or like whatever. But again, I didn't say privacy, and it like pulled like four sections in which I was explicitly talking about things that gained privacy without actually saying that that's what was happening. And it worked. And I'm just like, this is so fucking cool.
It's amazing.
Like, I don't know shit about the code, you know? Like I can't write two good lines. All I can do is argue with it about architecture. But it's been wild. Like I've got a whole rabbit hole to go down in like image cataloging and captioning. I've been testing like five different captioning models. Like Blip2 and Florence and Cog VLM. Like, I mean, just like Lava, to just see which gives like the best captions, and OCR for like text and stuff. I'm gonna organize my entire meme database. It's gonna be great. But anyway, so that's the rabbit hole I've been down. Are you doing any fun side projects?
Well, I use it all the time for work, right? So, but sure. Side projects,
you're
not that much.
You're probably just stuck at work.
I'm stuck at work, and then when I want to do like side, just continue working. Honestly, I did like one of the simplest thing that I did, just like time conversion interface. So it was always annoying for me to see all the ads that all of the time conversion websites have. So I just made my own in like a half an hour, basically. Which it looks exactly the way I want. Like I hoped a website like this to be. It's super simple, but it's just one of those things so that where you, okay, as a developer, I'm not going to take like the half a day that it will take to actually do this. And I'm definitely not a designer. So without AI, I couldn't actually like make it look good, right? But yeah, now yeah. I can like with AI, it's just half an hour. You like put a few prompts there. And gives you exactly what you want. So it just, you know, just some tools that are very small, very like, you know, that you think that should already exist, but it, and they do. They just have so many ads, subscription, whatever, right? So annoying.
There's not like that one just like open source, easy, like, you know, like just like out there that you don't have to deal with this.
That is just the way you want it. Right? So, that's it. So I'm not doing anything big with it, but yeah.
You know, I was just thinking that's a perfect one. So I have another, this has been a much bigger application project, and I actually want some real developers to look at it and make sure it's not just like a bunch of spaghetti code. It's a pretty fun project. And I think it'd be really useful. That's like kind of a perfect one. It's called DropClick. And I use it for like conversion and transcription and just like a bunch of like one-off things that I need to do while I'm doing my workflow. But it's built so that like, so I build a lot of these like single purpose scripts that just do one job, but I ended up with a folder with like 50 of these things. Yeah. And so like, it's like, oh my God, how do I even sort through which one I'm using? And my favorite thing is to just have it so I can have a file and I drop it on the icon for the thing I want to do, for the process that I want to do. Like, that's what I do with the show. As soon as this is done, I'm going to download this. I'm going to drop it onto my transcription tool. Mm-hmm. And it's going to convert, pull the audio, convert it, and then give me a transcription. But every one of them needs like this little different scripting environment, or like it's a Python thing or it's a JavaScript thing.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah, yeah. And so I built basically an environment, like a little interface with just a drop zone. And then I can drag stuff to it, and then I can select which. I can just keep building these little scripts that don't need all of the packaging material. Mm. And so other people would be able to build for it too. And like a simple, stupid, simple little thing is like I have a bunch of them, like convert to JPEG, convert this GIF to a WebP or vice versa. But a great one would be like type in your time and like convert it to a different time zone. Or, you know, convert this to Fahrenheit or Celsius or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a super fun little thing. And AI is just, from just 6 months ago or a year ago, there were dead end projects that like I couldn't finish because it just wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I didn't have the time to fight with it, that now I'm going back and just like knocking out. In no time.
It's one-shotting like stuff that was impossible like just a year ago.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's so crazy. So on the reverse of that, in the next 10 years, what do you think's going to happen? Like what's the biggest thing that you think you should or anybody should prepare for or think about coming in the future? Again, not necessarily Bitcoin related, but things that they need to be doing now to prepare for or think about.
Again, AI is a major change now. A lot of people are saying that it's going, you know, as a lot of people are talking about this apocalypse scenario, let's say, where AI is taking all the jobs and, you know, nobody works anymore. So the government will start giving people the UBI money, you know, the free money because nobody will have any job and the productivity will be like infinite. I don't believe in this. I think this sounds like nonsense to me. It's definitely a productivity boost. It's definitely gonna make a lot of things very interesting. But it's not. I don't know how jobs will look like because I mean I don't know. Like software development is a very recent job, right? Podcasting is a very recent job, so it's stuff that I'm not. I just cannot foresee what will be the new jobs that are created post AI, but I'm very confident that there will be like a lot of jobs that are gonna die and lots of new jobs that are gonna open up, basically. So yeah. I'd say that the biggest thing is just that you have to be prepared for big changes, but of course you have just holding using Bitcoin is a good way to be prepared for changes. But I also don't think that people need to be hysterical about all of that. It's going to be very interesting. You just need to keep your mind open and try to be adaptable, let's say.
Yeah. Curious what your thoughts on QC, quantum computing, is, and your thoughts around the FUD. I'm increasingly pulling back away from it being like a huge concern, but I do want to read. I'll probably read it on the show. It's long. But Nick Carter has like a 3-part series on it that I want to give a good effort to. You know, like I don't want to dismiss something just because I found what I think is really strong evidence that it's not made the progress that it has been marketed that it has had. But I'm curious your thoughts. Have you dug into it? Like, and in the context of a 10-year time frame, are you worried about it? Personally,
so I mean, I don't know anything about it personally, right? I did not dig into it. I did not try. I just on that side, like I know my limits. I know that okay, I cannot just know everything about AI, everything about quantum computing.
Of course,
nobody can, right? So I don't try to pretend. I just try to find like a few very smart people that I know that understand it and that I can trust. And from what I see and the way I can feel from these people and from generally, I'd say I'm not very concerned about it at all. everybody that actually, that I know that actually knows about quantum computing is just saying that it's still, like, it's possible, but it's still far off, right? I mean, we might get caught by surprise to some extent of some major breakthrough. That's always possible. But I think it's very unlikely. And I think, I mean, maybe like 15, 20 years, but I don't think even 10 years is reasonable for us to have to worry really about it. So it's very important that we like consider solutions, that we have some backup plans ready for if something happens, if things move way faster than we expect them. And we kind of have like a rough consensus of what to do in the next, let's say, like 10 years from now, what to do. We kind of, it's important that we start reaching this rough consensus of, okay, this is likely what we're going to do, what we should do with coins that are vulnerable, that are not going to move. How do we move coins to stuff that is quantum secure? But I'm not worried at it, like in the near future, I'm not worried at all. Like, I don't think it's going to be a concern. And even in the farther future, I think we can solve it relatively, like in a very, in a way which will just not make it a big concern. It's not going to kill Bitcoin. It's not going to harm it in a big way, I think. So I think we'll be fine. I don't think it's a real concern. A lot of people are getting really stressed about it or saying, oh, Bitcoin is terrible because it is vulnerable to quantum computing. I don't see it that way at all. I'm very relaxed on that.
Yeah. So I did a bit of a deep dive into, just went on a bit of a rampage on reading papers, like trying to like go to the source, you know, on like quantum stuff. And I found a really fun one that I don't even know how I stumbled upon it. But it was referencing, so I had gotten kind of concerned, not like heavily concerned, but concerned enough that when I saw some of the examples of factorization that they had done, one of them was like one septillion something, you know, like it was a big long number. And I was like, damn, that's a little concerning. And there were three claims specifically that had me, you know, talking about like how many qubits they had versus like how many it took to do this and that sort of thing. And Jameson Lopp had a good piece talking about like, you know, how many, or a talk and an article on how many qubits would be needed to, with, you know, good error correction to actually break Bitcoin. But then I found out that all three of the ones that I had been really concerned about had actually used a trick that one of them, if you actually turned the number into binary, it was like 10000000000. Like it was like, it just happened to be like this perfect thing where when you broke it down, the actual quote unquote physics of the quantum had none of the complexity of the apparent number. And then there was another one where, the number that they factored it to, the factorization that they did, was actually one number up and one number down from the square root of that number. And then what they'd actually done with the experiment is that basically in the big scheme of things, what looked like something that had, you know, a billion bits of like, not a billion bits, but like, you know, 12 bits or 10 bits of entropy, which were going to be like really difficult, and this quantum computer solved this problem, is they essentially boiled the problem down to, they picked a number that was so easy to factor from one math problem that they actually only had 2 bits of entropy, which means that out of all the experiments, they've literally never had anything to actually factor that was greater than the number 35 or greater than like 3 bits of entropy or something like that. And I was just like, okay, that changed my perspective, because I've been looking at this for like 5 years, like, you know, and getting more and more nervous. And then to find out that there's not actually a genuine record breaking of a genuine factorization of a genuinely random number.
It feels it's too full of, let's say, like cheating or tricks, let's say. They all have the financial interest, let's say, to show these results, like true or not, They have the financial incentive to have results and as fast as they can. If they can make a headline, that's good enough. They don't have to have the actual product, right? If they can make the headline that they did something, sometimes that's enough. And I think in the industry of quantum computing, it seems enough for a lot of projects.
Yeah. And it's not, especially because it's such an asymmetric, scary thing. You know, like, if it does happen, that's a big problem. That's not a small problem.
Exactly. Yeah. So they can scare you a lot, right? And then if they can make a headline that scares you, they can have a big effect. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not to say that things can't change very, very quickly. Because, you know, if you'd asked me in 2019 where AI was going to be in 5 years, I certainly would have been wrong about that shit.
We were all extremely wrong on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about? Terminators? No, not even close. It's like Boston Dynamics and ChatGPT.
You're talking about like Siri? Like,
this is basically Terminator, right?
I mean, we were all just completely wrong about it. I was definitely wrong about it. And at first, I was completely like close to it. Like, okay, this is not going to work. This was terrible. And it was very bad at first. For coding, it was very bad at first. But yeah, now like you can't deny it. And if you're trying to deny it, I mean, your productivity compared to others is going to be, you know, terrible. Yeah. You just can't compete without it anymore.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm curious, what are you most bullish on right now with Bitcoin? Price aside, like, what are you most bullish on about like the space and the tech and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, in general, so I've worked on Miniscript in the last like year or so. It's been fun. I'm definitely bullish on that and on more schemes like being popularized, because it is very important. I think it makes it very easy to, very secure to recover funds in case something happens or plan your inheritance better. So it has a lot of options. And I think the UX with it is getting so much better these days, and people are starting to actually talk about it. So I'm pretty excited on that. I hope to eventually see Covenant happening, which will be another big UX win, I think, in the long term. Mm-hmm. But yeah, even if it happens, it will take just so much time to actually have real products using it. So it's something that will be nice to see, but it will take a long time. Short time. Yeah, I'm not sure. In general, there are a lot of layer two projects that are making payments even better now. So there's just so many things that are happening right now. So much work that is being done. But it's no longer, you know, like a few years ago, it was, okay, something new came out and everybody was talking about it. Now the community is just so big and so dispersed that, yeah, it's hard to make noise anymore. It's hard to actually see exactly like everything that's going on.
I totally agree there. And what's funny is that you know, like, one of the things that, like, how I think about this is actually why, because I a little bit disagree with you on the four-year cycle thing that we talked about earlier. And I genuinely kind of think it's like the pattern's broken, because I kind of think 2026 is going to be a green year. The reason I think this is because every single bear market, we start building a lot of great tools. And then when the quote unquote bull market happens, we start to realize those tools. Like we kind of see those tools flourish, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the last couple of bull markets in particular, we usually like push to the kind of the limits of what the adoption cycle would entertain with it before it was basically got to a point where it couldn't keep facilitating it without a bunch of new foundational work. And then we go back into a bear market and then we build the next layer of things and then we finally get to play and explore and use them. And they'd go through an adoption cycle. I don't feel like we've had that adoption cycle. Like, I don't feel like we've actually realized any of the tools at scale that we have built, you know, whatever the scale is that they can actually extend to in the last bear market. In fact, I think everything that's happened around Bitcoin in the bull market that we have had so far or the run up to, you know, 120. And so it was totally irrelevant to everything built before.
It's all in EDFs. Yeah. So the tools that everybody's using now, it's all in the financial institutions now.
Yeah. Which is kind of what makes me think. And then going back to like my idea of like path of greatest pain, my thinking is that we're going to have a bad first half of 2026. Everybody's going to be convinced we're going to go into a bull market. And then everybody's basically going to plan on it and, you know, position themselves that way. And then Bitcoin is going to turn around and kick them in the nuts again and then go up for the second half of 2026. And everybody's like, oh my God, and we'll probably have like a year of like really, really great move. And then everybody's going to be convinced that this is it and it's going to run forever. And then it's going to crash really, really hard. And we're going to go back into a bear market and kick them in the nuts
it's
again.
Very possible. I see. I doubt it, but I'm not like, I would say that I'm like, I'll give it like a 40% probability. So I would say that 40%. It's not likely.
That's fair.
But it's That's a fair. Good chance still. I'd say, yeah. It's not my first guess, but it wouldn't really like surprise me. Yeah.
Wouldn't super surprise you? Yeah.
What would surprise me is yeah, I guess like a huge drop or a huge jump right now would like, yeah, would surprise me basically. If we go to 40 or 50, like, in the next month or two, or if we go to like 150, that would surprise me now. Mm-hmm.
Both of those would be, yeah.
Yeah, going to the 150 or like even a bit more in the end of 2026, less surprising, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel like in the short term, I mean, I'm not going to place any major bets either way on any of these predictions, but I feel like in the short term, I feel like we're crabbing to down.
Yeah,
you know,
I see.
We might see 70s again. We'll see.
Yeah, that seems likely. I think.
No, what's the thing you're most proud of building? And that doesn't have to be like a Bitcoin wallet or anything. That can be a birdhouse, you know. Like, but what do you think about when you're like, you know, I built a thing. What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah, no, I'm not good with like building things in the physical world. This is why I chose being a developer and build things in the digital world. So definitely not a birdhouse on that type of stuff.
I've made some good birdhouses, man. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm sure it's super fun. I just not something that I'm good at really. So I think for me, I mean, Bitcoin wallets is stuff that I've been working on for a long time. I've done a few and I'm very proud of these. I think it helped a lot of people to actually securely store their coins, right? And I think that made a big impact on a lot of people. I'm happy about that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. No, I would definitely say that. Just because I think a lot of wallet work is really under thanked. And you know, like it's not the most grateful work, you know, it's like kind of wallets are hard to really make money off of.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's difficult to get like the UX for that is an insanely difficult problem. And it's mostly thankless. You know, like it's just like if it works, great. I have a wallet that works. If it doesn't work, you suck.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to, well, it's also hard to make everyone happy. So everyone wants their tiny little feature. Nobody actually wants to pay for their feature. So it's hard. It's not an easy work to make wallets. It's not easy to do open source development. But I still like it. I mean, I've been doing it for a very long time already. And yeah, I enjoy it.
Nice. What do you have plans for? You got plans for things with BitKit that you can share projects and or features that you're excited or interesting about that you can actually share?
I'm honestly not sure what I can or can't share. What I'm excited about is bringing stuff that I've done in the past, like, you know, hardware wallets, maybe Miniscript, all of that, like bring all of that into Bitcoin, I think would be very interesting. It would be very Sweet. Fun to work on. So yeah, I'm kind of just excited about that.
Hell yeah. Okay. Well, my wife has messaged me twice. I think she needs me, which I don't want to, I hate that I might have to cut this short. Maybe give, any final thoughts? Actually, there's still something else I wanted to ask is, where in Bitcoin did you think we would already be that you kind of wish we had that we don't have now? Maybe in like how you're using it. Like mine was, I was hoping I'd be able to like integrate more into a Bitcoin standard. It wouldn't be, like I'd have more like flow, I guess, between like the old system and the new system, so to speak. And then also in the reverse, what do we have now? Like, and your expectation of like what we have in Bitcoin that you didn't think we would have.
I think on what you're saying with the integration with the old system, it kind of happened. Like Square is also a huge thing, I think, on that.
That is huge.
I mean, that seems to be happening, and that's something that I didn't necessarily expect that we'd have. And now we're starting to see more and more. And I think that's increasing with more payment processors that will start integrating that. What I thought we'd see more and we don't is more, I'd say, privacy tools. It's just that the regulation is choking it so much.
Yeah.
It's scary to be a privacy developer these days. It's that the legal risk is just insane. So unless, I don't know, you live somewhere extremely remote or you're really protecting your anonymity, it's just crazy. You know, it's scary to be a privacy developer. So nobody's, or a lot of people, even myself, right, are to some extent avoiding working on certain privacy tools because it's risky right now. It's extremely risky.
Yeah.
And we used to have more and we used to have more work on that. So that's something that we no longer really have as much. And I'm kind of disappointed about.
Yeah, I think it's Rodriguez is like, he'll start his prison sentence like tomorrow or something, won't he? Like one of them, I can't remember exactly which one, but one of them will be starting their prison sentence like very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, that sucks. Every time I think about it, it pisses me off.
It's hard, yeah. So I mean, I hope Trump will give a pardon there, but I'm somewhat skeptical on that. And in general, Trump will do that, and even if Trump does a complete reversal on app privacy in general and starts supporting it, which is also not likely, then the next president will completely shut it off again, right? Things are a lot better than they were under Biden, right? So with the Biden administration, they were going after everyone, right? Not just actual privacy tools, but everyone that is working on Bitcoin. That was crazy, right? Now with Trump, the situation is much better. But then again, like soon enough, he'll be out. And then what's next, right? The next one might be even worse than Biden. Then,
there's a lot of political volatility.
Yeah, there's a lot of political volatility right now on that, and it's complicated.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I hope that'll remind me. I'll post the link to the petition again. I'm in the episode show notes. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't even been thinking about that today. Maybe just because I got another ping from my wife. I think we're having and I need help with the kids disaster, or the contractors trying to get the question out of me or something. Where can people find you, and what kind of like last thoughts do you have on let's say somebody got into Bitcoin this year or last year, and they were expecting a big bull market, and now they're just kind of like, they're down in the dumps, maybe, that this wasn't like a huge blowout, like hype year. And it's just kind of been crab walking, so to speak. What do you say to them? And then follow that up with just like how to follow you and find you and the stuff that you're working on.
Yeah, I do think that we'll see big price gains eventually. It's now, whatever it's in 3 years, but the price will eventually continue to go up. I'm very confident on that. So I'd say first thing is just don't panic. Don't try to panic sell everything and be done with it, because that's the worst outcome. The important thing, right? What we recommend everyone, especially in bear markets, is learn the fundamentals, understand why it's important, why we actually need Bitcoin, not just because the price goes up, but because it's an actual alternative to the government money, right? It's an actual monetary system that is completely separated from the government. And, so it's the important thing is that people understand that. That's how we get them to stay and how we make sure that they understand Bitcoin. Every time that the government is doing an injustice and is using the money for it, every time they try to freeze bank accounts of protesters, for example, that's an advertisement that they're making for Bitcoin, right? So people just need to understand that most of all. And that's why they would stay also. The important thing is just to understand why we actually need Bitcoin, not just whatever the price is going up now or in 2 years. That's not the most relevant part of it. And where they can find me, I'm not as much Twitter, to be honest, right now anymore, but I'm still available there. I'll still tweet from some time. I'm definitely seeing everything and I'll respond there if my DMs are open, if anyone wants to ask anything.
Sweet. And I would add to the whole learn the fundamentals. I've always liked that, just because when the price is down is when you actually realize why. Because if the why was just you were chasing a green candle, then you weren't here for the right reason anyway, because Bitcoin will have green candles because of the real why. But you're never going to live through the red ones if you don't understand how important that one is. Exactly. But also this is the time to work, to earn, because right now sats are cheap. So when you're earning sats, you earn more sats during the bear market. So get to work, put your boots on and get to work. Dude, thanks for joining me.
Was awesome.
It's kind of short notice, and glad we actually got to do this. Especially if we didn't do it before. Which I'm gonna find out. I'm gonna find out if we had done an old episode and I had just forgotten. I'm gonna link it to you. I'll put it down in the show notes if it exists. But otherwise, I'll have links to your Twitter and all that good stuff. You have a Noster?
I don't use it that much, but I do have. I'll send you later.
Send it to me anyway. Maybe somebody will zap you.
All right.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah,
really appreciate
it was awesome.
It,
thanks
dude.
For having me. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Have a good night. All right.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Let me know if you have any other questions, or ping us. Tag us, whatever it is, if you got comments or thoughts on anything we covered in the show, or anything we should have covered, let us know. I will have links to follow Ben. He also sent me his MPub for Noster, so you can find him up there, as well as X. And like I said, I'll have the links to the episodes that we did of his previous works earlier on the show. And check him out. Follow him. Links, details, all the goodies. Don't forget to check out our amazing sponsors, which also, just a heads up, is it actually really, really helps the show if you use the links specifically I have in the description. I mean, obviously there's discounts, so you probably ought to anyway, but ledin.io, LEDNIO, if you're .io, if you're getting a Bitcoin-backed loan, or if you are considering selling Bitcoin and you realize that this is not the opportune time to do it, a Bitcoin-backed loan is a godsend in the right spot at the right time. So if you're on a Bitcoin standard, use it wisely. But Ledin.io is a fantastic company with a super easy product.
Check out pubkey.app as well, particularly if you're a builder. They had a vibe coding session, like a hackathon thing recently, with some really, really cool tools that they built, like just exploring what you can do with their stack. Check that out. Also link to Chroma, getchroma.co for light health in general, red light therapy, all sorts of really great products. And that one has a discount also. Bitcoin Audible gets you 10% off. And then lastly, the HRF, shout out to those guys for supporting my work and just for the incredible work they do. Tickets to their Oslo Freedom Forum, actually, also down in the show notes. Thank you guys for listening. I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, that's my two cents.